My name is Christopher Carlberg, and I'm the owner of Christopher Bridge Wines and Satori Springs Vineyard. I'm a grower and a wine producer, making both Pinot Noir and Pinot Gris. And they're very hands-on made wines, boutique wines that we love to participate in all aspects of their development. I'm also part of the Oregon Pinot Gris Association here in Oregon. And if anyone would be interested in finding out specifically about our vineyard in wines, that's ChristopherBridgeWines.com. And the Oregon Pinot Gris group is the OregonPinotGris.org.
You're listening to iWine Radio. My name is Lynn Crelo Chamberlain, host. As happens in life, usually one conversation leads to another. And a couple weeks ago, I was turned on to big comments that I said that, you know, when I think of Oregon wines, I mean, everybody thinks of Pinot Noir, but for me, white wine wise, it's always Oregon Pinot Gris. And then I learned of an organization called OregonPinotGris.org, whose mission really is to talk about what is Oregon Pinot Gris and how is it different from wines that are labeled Pinot Gris in other parts of the world and wines that are labeled Pinot Grigio. And so naturally, we have with us today our guest to be explaining that, and that is Christopher Carlberg, who along with his wife founded the Christopher Bridge Wines and the Sartori Springs Estate Vineyard in Willamette Valley, Oregon. And they have on their website, what they have is their current releases is Pinot Noir, a vineyard designated Pinot Noir, a state Pinot Noir, and a dry Pinot Gris and a semi-sweet Pinot Gris, and also an estate dry Muscat. And that sounds really cool. I like dry Muscats. But Christopher, thank you so very much for joining us today on Wine and Dine. And let's start by asking, I'm just going to use what Joe set up for us as talking points. Some people might not even realize that Pinot Gris and Pinot Grigio are names of the same grape.
Mm-hmm. Well, they are. And I suppose you could say that Pinot Grigio is more affiliated with the Italian sort of productions, and the Gris is more of an Alsatian and, well, of course, Oregon perspective.
Yeah, and it's interesting that Oregon early on chose the name Pinot Gris instead of the Grigio. So how this Oregon Pinot Gris group began at the end of 2011, and what was the mission statement, so to speak?
Well, the mission statement, I think, is multifold, and of course we wanted to promote Pinot Gris in the rest of the U.S., that Oregon does make something more than just Pinot Noir, which, of course, we're already very well noted for.
Yeah,
I think Pinot Gris is our second largest production here, and it is an outstanding wine, and we just didn't feel that was well enough known. Otherwise, it provided a wonderful forum for us winemakers to get to know each other better and to share our perspectives, our knowledge, and, of course, to taste each other's wines. Those are all part of great winemaking, and gosh, that's what we love doing.
Do you know how many acres are planted to Pinot Gris in Oregon?
You know, that we have some larger estates which have up to, you know, maybe 300 acres worth, but for the most part, they're smaller acreages that range between maybe, 6 to 15. I would say a Pinot Gris vineyard alone, you know, averaging is probably going to be somewhere around the 20 to 30 acres, but that's me just making a guess. David Lett, I believe, he was back in the 1966, brought in the first Pinot Gris vines and got them started. And actually, he started grafting some Riesling over into Pinot Gris, kind of liked it, wanted to see how it would do.
Okay.
And and kind of grew from there. Other people began to take on to doing a little bit with it, but I think everybody wanted to promote Pinot Noir because that's where the big splash was.
Yeah, give a virtual tasting here for us. If someone was to have a bottle of, let's say, an Alsatian Pinot Gris open in front of them, a bottle of Northern Italian Pinot Grigio open in front of them, and a bottle of your Christopher Bridge Wines Pinot Gris, how would they differ in the way they smell, in the way they feel in the mouth, even the alcohol content?
Well, now there you go. That's where we have these big meetings, so we can all taste these wines side by side, although we don't do too much on the Italian or the Alsatian when we're tasting them. But I want to tell you a little bit about Oregon in general and about some of the growers here, which will sort of lead into this.
Okay.
Many of us are small growers, and we're independent. We're kind of independent-minded, and we're passionate about our places. We're passionate about how we handle our fruit, grow our fruit. And as a matter of fact, that's one of the big things. We do grow our fruit. Most of the winemakers I know have their hands out in the earth and in their vines, and they take care of that crop. And they sort of parent it up to the position where it becomes wine. And I guess there's almost sort of a poetic quality to us. We love that ability to translate the authenticity of our fields, of our place, into a wine that then we feel is something we want to share. Then we want to share our history. We want to share our Northwest, the places that we live in. Now, I think that comes down to a point that we want not to be austere, sort of undistinguishable.
Okay.
Sometimes I call it big city skinny girl makeup model wine.
Okay.
The
okay.
Grigio. But I can't really legitimately say that, because I think there are probably wines in Italy which are different than what we would normally think of as kind of a thin Grigio. And Alsatian wines I tend to perceive as maybe being even a little sweeter than ours. When I think of Zinhumbrecht and Trimbach and Ostertag and guys like that, which spend a lot of time, of course, doing biodynamic stuff, they really focus on, let's build fruit and authenticity and earth into our wines. Let's not cut out that.
Okay.
And one tends to make the wine a little bit more austere when one you know, overworks it or overcrops a vineyard, taking large flatland vineyards that produce heavy tonnage. I think you kind of lose some of the authenticity and uniqueness there.
Okay.
But I would say our wines are a big mouthful. They're luscious. They're delicious. They're seductive. They can be a wonderful, charming kiss on the deck in the evening, or they can whisper beautifulness into your ear at dinner time.
Mm.
They're both standalone wines and wines which embrace wonderful foods. They love companionship.
That is so, I love the way you're putting it. Are you a romance writer, novelist?
Well, I guess I think a little poetically, and my place brings that out in me. I just can't hardly talk about wine without thinking about who I am and what this place is, because so much, I think, of us growers here, we're that way, that we become so connected with things. We become connected with our place, with this Oregon, this weather, this thing of nature, and we love to put that in, find that developing in our wines, and that's what we want to share, our personal touch, our personalities.
And it's
even
very much
the personality of the Northwest, I think, is something we love to share.
And this is I would think, not only for you, but for so many of the members of the Oregon Pinot Gris group, is that it's family.
Absolutely. They love to talk about what they're doing with each other. They love to drink wine with each other and point out things that they like in each other's wines. They love to celebrate at the end of a harvest with the people that helped them. You know, it's just a wonderful thing. And that's I guess something that we want to say this in our wines, is this personal touch, this ability to see the beauty in our place. And you know, understand too that winemakers are real people, and they think a lot about what they're doing and why they're doing it. And we do want to preserve our place, and then we suffer because we're farmers, because nature is wild and unpredictable, and it throws us all sorts of curves that we have to deal with.
Yeah,
and that, if we can suffer through it, is what makes things really worthwhile doing, because it makes us feel alive.
What is this year's harvest ending up being like, the vintage of 2012?
Oh, wow. It's really, really different. It's big. It's going to be powerful. The reason being, although we started late with bud break and such, the summer throughout June was cold and wet, and then it turned warm and it turned dry, and it kept that way all the way into, you know, October.
Wow.
And what that caused at the end, beautiful cycle of warm days, cool nights, warm days, cool nights. And then we got a little wind coming up, and it kind of took a lot of the moisture out of the grapes and just really bounced up
acidity.
The brick levels, the sugar content of the wines.
Because it concentrated.
Yes, it became very concentrated without losing a lot of acid. So this nice balance kind of developed, with strong acidity and yet high sugars. And I guess that comes into a new realm here where we have to make some choices about what we want to do. And, you know, I mean, when you get a lot of sugar in the grape, it's going to translate into some high alcohols.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have to compensate a little bit there and adjust acids and whatnot. But big, big harvest. Wonderful wines are developing right now.
Maybe some dessert wines resulting as with the 2012 as well.
I think these wines are going to be grand.
Christopher Carlberg of Christopher Bridge Wines and the Sartori Springs Estate Vineyard in Willamette Valley, Oregon. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
It's been lovely talking with you.
We will have links up for you to learn more, not only about their property, but the Oregon Pinot Gris Group as well. And I thank you for listening to Wine and Dine. iWine Radio is a production of Food Tastes Better with Wine on the web at iWineRadio.com.